What I learned is that I don't need to talk a lot, but if the extra questions that I ask people, they usually remember you. Like they come into the shop, I'll ask them, who are you buying this for? And then they were starting to tell you their story, and it become a good, nice conversation when they leave the shop. And I think this is very important to make them have that good positive impact in their mind when they leave, and that drives them to read all the newsletter and Facebook, and yeah, that's a good thing.
Do you love your life as a small business owner? Let's be real, sometimes we just don't. It's my hope that this, the My Daily Business podcast, helps you regain a little of that lost love through practical, actionable tips, tools, and tactics, interviews with creative and curious small business owners, and in-depth coaching episodes with me, your host, Fiona Kalacki. With more than 20 years experience in marketing, brand, content, and systems, and having now helped thousands of small business owners, I know what it takes to build a business that you can be proud of and that actually aligns with your values, your beliefs, and your hopes for the future. So much of our daily life is spent working on and in the businesses and the brands that we are creating. And so it makes sense to actually love what you do. So let's get into this podcast and help you figure out how to love your business and your life on the daily. Hello and welcome to episode 394 of the My Daily Business podcast. Today is a small business interview with somebody who is so beautifully positive, super creative and curious, and just a wonderful person to chat to. Before we get stuck into that interview, I of course want to acknowledge the land on which I am coming from and the traditional owners and custodians of that land, and that is the Wawarong and Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and I pay my respects to their elders past and present and acknowledge that sovereignty has never been ceded. The other thing I wanted to mention is that Marketing for Your Small Business, our online course, it's available at any time, but twice a year we do offer a live coaching component to that. So you do the course in your own time and then you come to an hour live coaching that runs for 9 consecutive weeks. So the aim is that you not only buy the course and get through it, but you work through it with guidance and help. And then at the end of the 9 weeks, you present your marketing plans to myself and the rest of the group. So it really is a way of keeping you accountable and making sure that Marketing for Your Small Business is not just a course that you buy and then you never actually go through. It's a course that you buy and you actually implement the learnings from. So if you're interested in that, you can find all the information at marketingforyoursmallbusiness.com. All right, let's get into today's small business interview. So today I am talking to the wonderful Suki McMaster. And yes, that is definitely her real name, McMaster. When I saw that, I was like, that is the coolest last name. Did you sort of make that up because you're the master of what you do? And she's like, no, it's genuinely my last name. So I love that because she is a master in the creative space. And many of you listening will know the art and the creativity and the goodness that comes from Suki McMaster. And so in today's chat, we talk all about what Suki did originally, because this was not the career path that she was on when she sort of finished school and got into university studies, how she has created this business in a country that she is not from. She's originally from Hong Kong, and also how she decides on the different products that she actually creates and what all of that has been like, as well as being the face of your brand, which I know that lots of people who listen to this podcast, lots of people I work with kind of struggle with that showing up on social media, showing up in their marketing. So it's such a beautiful chat, and Suki is just such a gorgeous soul. So it was wonderful to have her on the podcast. So here it is, my interview with Suki McMaster. Welcome to the podcast, Suki. How are you feeling about life right now?
I am fantastic. Thank you. And I'm super excited to be here today. I'm a big fan of yours, so I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm equally a fan of yours, so I am also excited. So tell us about your business. Lots of people listening will know about it. I'm sure lots of them already follow you, but you do a lot of different things and you do it under one brand name, which is also your name. So, yeah, tell us about what your business is.
So I am an illustrator and I put my drawings on everything and anything that I can think of. So I have like cushions, tea towels, baby clothing, prints and everything else. I have a shop at South Melbourne Market and it has been about 8 years. The shop sells mainly my products, but I also have a little bit of other products from local makers and designers. These are the people that I met at different markets because I do a lot of interstate markets. So I get to know a lot of creatives. So it's nice to support each other.
Wow. And so how, when you just, you just said it then, like how you got started and you do interstate markets. So how did you start and how did you go from an illustrator to I'm actually going to create products?
I started to do markets in my uni days. I always making something, but I remember my first days was selling just fabrics. I just have my drawings, prints on fabrics from Spoon Flowers and sell it at markets. And I was living in Sydney at that time and I was so crazy. I will fly to Melbourne to do Rose Street Market and then fly back.
Wow.
That was like 20 years ago. So yeah, when Rose Street first starts, because in Sydney, you only have the some markets along Bondi. So it's not really arty, crafty places in Sydney. So yeah, I decided to fly to the market at Rose Street and then fly back the same day. I was really crazy.
Did you sell your stock there? Did you just carry it in suitcases?
Yeah, just suitcases. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And so
when you're young, you do stupid things like that.
How long did it take for you to get the store there, the part in South Melbourne market now? How long have you been in business before you then were like, okay, I want a permanent sort of space?
So we're very lucky. We sold our house to a developer in Sydney. So we had a chance to choose what to do. And I tell my husband, I really, really want to give it a go. So we moved to Melbourne. But it's such a big gamble because before we moved to Melbourne, all the markets that we did were so bad. We hardly pay for anything. We can't even pay for Macca's for lunch. It was so bad. But you know that fire in you? You always think that it will work. So yeah, we just decided to move to Melbourne. We had our first pop-up for about 8 weeks. And then the two pop-up later, we had a shop in South Melbourne market. And since 8 years, yeah.
Wow. And so I always find it really interesting, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, to have like lots of people have an idea and lots of people have that ambition inside them and a lot of people don't do anything with that. A lot of people, you know, work in a safe job and there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of people, like it's a privilege to be able to start a business. It really is. A lot of people don't have that at all. But I think sometimes, like I know for me personally, I had parents who were incredibly supportive, and particularly at the end, at the start, they were a bit like, can you not do this like whole creative stuff? Like, what are you going to do with your life? And I was working at a lot of call centers and things, but at the end, they were like, you know, they were always supportive, but they didn't really understand having your own business. My sister's a doctor, my brother's a psychologist, my other brother's a lawyer. So I was definitely the outlier, but I'm always interested in like, how did you have that ambition to take that idea and make something of it? I know you said the property had given you an opportunity to be able to do stuff, but did you grow up in a family where your parents were very like, just do whatever your heart desires? Or
so I have typical Asian parents that do not want you to do anything creative. I actually had a master in accounting that I really, really hate numbers, but I did it anyway.
Wow.
I don't even do my book. My husband, I just don't like it. But when you're at that age, mom tells you what to do and then you just do it and you don't really think what you want. My dad has a business in the construction industry, but it was really ups and downs a lot and he would never expect me to do my own thing. But when I started, my mom still don't really recognize my business, the value of it. She's like, I guess you can find a job one day. Yeah, she never think that this is a real job, but it's okay. Yes, I just accept who she is and think that it's the culture. It's just not, yeah.
And generations as well. And I think like my parents, we all came out here when I was four. I was the youngest of four. My parents were very much like, we've sacrificed to get you here. You know, now you got to get a good education. Now you got to get a good job. And job that was very easy for them to relay to everyone. Like, oh, she's a doctor. I mean, everyone knows what that means. Like, that's my sister. But I remember my dad being like, even when I worked at Amazon in the UK and I could say to him, this is a shop. It's online. It sells millions of products. And I am in the marketing team for this. And he would be like, right. And he had his Irish accent, like, people just buy things online. Like, they do, Dad. They buy millions. But yeah, just that it wasn't as easy to describe. And so then if that didn't come from your family, where did that come from, that ambition? And when did you decide, okay, I've got a master's of accounting, but I'm actually going to be an illustrator?
I don't even work in the accounting industry for one second in my life. I worked in hospital before, but I think once you start working for someone, you realize that, oh, am I that type of person that can do this forever? And the answer is no. I always know that I am not working for some, I'm not a good employee. I'm not. I never follow the rules. I don't listen to my manager. Everyone loves me. Like, when I leave some of the jobs, my manager actually cried. But I just never, yeah, it's never my thing. Yeah. I'm a good team member, but I'm just like, yeah, I only do it because I like you.
I feel like people could just fall in love with you all the time. I feel like you're so, like, positive and upbeat, and even just chatting to you now, I'm just, like, laughing and having such a nice time. And so that leads me to, like, you are a huge part of your brand. Obviously, the brand is, and so it's, you know, part and parcel of you, and you're the face of the business, and, you know, you show up on social media and you show up at events and everything else. Has that always been something that came very naturally to you, to be like, yep, I can get out, I can meet people, I can be the face of the brand, or have you had to work on that?
I worked really hard and I'm still working. I'm an introvert. I'm much better now. I used to just hide behind my husband or just hide behind the desk and hoping people would just pay me money and leave me and don't talk to me. Yeah, I'm not a look at me person. So it's really hard to learn, but you need to. This is a very essential skills. You don't need to be really dramatic and put a show on, but to have a good conversation is important. I think the part of the reason is English is not my first language. So sometimes I do feel a little bit awkward and don't know what to do. And that's once that scares comes into my head, I'm like, oh, I can't talk anymore. I have to go. And yeah, but I'm learning. I'll get there.
Oh, I feel like you're already, you know, doing so well in that department. Was there anything besides pushing yourself? I mean, you've mentioned your husband a few times. Is he like a big supporter? Did you do any kind of training, or did you read anything, or were you just like, okay, this is part of my business, I just need to suck it up and put myself out there?
I used to get him to do everything, pick up phone calls. I still don't pick up the phone, but I try to put myself as hard as I can. This is part of, especially with the shop, and we do a lot of wholesale, so you need to have the confidence to talk to people. It's just finding your way. I don't drink, so I won't push myself to drink. But at the same time, I find my way to blend in. Yeah.
Yeah. Saying that, because I also gave up drinking a while ago, and I think that's a really, and I've never thought of it like that, but having the ability to just have fun and enjoy yourself in a situation without alcohol, it's kind of similar to, like, in a way, like getting out there on social media and having fun and figuring out a way to do it that you're comfortable with.
It is so hard when social media has a lot of people jumping around. I'm just like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. I can't do this. But now we have two girls at the shop now, and they love jumping around. So they can do it.
Like, handing it over. And so with your vision, and when you started out and you're like, I'm going to do illustrations, and, you know, that's so personal. So personal. It's, you know, like, somebody, if they don't buy it, you know, I'm sure you could take that kind of personally. Like, this is my, yeah, this is my art. It's not just something I've bought from somebody else and I'm trying to sell to you. And so what kind of challenges did you face in balancing that kind of creative vision and this is what I want to do and it's my artwork with the actual practical aspects of this needs to sell, I need to figure out what sells, I need to, especially with stockists and wholesale, you know, you need to be creating things that people want to buy?
Yes. Oh, I should say, when I first start the business, I don't look at the word balance too seriously. I just do what I like and see if people like it. And you change gradually to see if people like this kind of work, and I will just do more of those instead of just being me So it's a give and take. But yeah, it's never a balance. Otherwise, I would be a graphic designer and just work for someone and just have, just separate. Yes, I don't know. It's really hard. It's hard not to take it personally.
And so with the practical parts of running this, and, you know, I think a lot of creative small business owners are also like self-deprecating and like, oh, no, I don't know. But you obviously do because you've done really well. This business has been going for a long time now. Is it?
8 years on the book.
But before that, you were, you know, doing things and going. And so you've been also going to all these different markets. And as you said at the start, you were flying down for these. And now, you know, there are markets everywhere now with incredible big companies and markets that are in every major city. And so can you tell us a bit about markets and like the practical things that you've learned and things that you wouldn't do again? Or if somebody's listening and they're like, I would love to have my stuff at a market, what would you tell them, like the do's and the don'ts?
Always go, always give it a go, especially when you're new. But I do think when you decide which market to go, ask yourself, what's the objective of going to the market? Is it just brand awareness? Like money is always the goal, but there should be something else as well. Like, do you want more people to know you? Do you want your newsletter, testing a new product, that kind of things? Yeah, because I remember the first Queensland Finders Keepers that I went before COVID, I set a really, really stupid goal, which is to make $10,000 in 2.5 days. But my product's only $20. So I don't know what I was thinking. My husband did tell me gently that I shouldn't have that high expectation, but I just told him off. But yes, so be realistic and also do your research. Check out who's going to the market. Also think about who you want to sell to. And just because all your friends are telling you that market is good, it doesn't mean it's your market. So you always just test it, do your own research, go there, stand there for half a day and see who's buying what. It is really important. Also, at least give it 6 months or a year to define whether your market is a success or not, because in my opinion, it really takes a long time to build up your customers and knowing your products, and never let the first market to define who you are. Yeah.
When you do markets, I mean, now that you've been doing them for a long time, do you just take what sells in the shop in your South Melbourne market that will sell everywhere else? Or do you go, oh, no, this is this particular audience. I need to bring more of, I don't know, more of like, let's say, your reusable coffee cups, of which I have one and I use it all the time. Like, how do you define what stock you need to bring to the market?
I'm still learning. Every market, every year is different. But something sells in Sydney will never sell in Melbourne. Something sell in Melbourne does not sell in Queensland. So I always adjust my products depends on where I go. Yeah, and price range as well. So Sydney people, maybe I shouldn't say that, but Sydney people seem to spend a little bit more compared to people in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Melbourne people do like more quirky and colourful stuff. And Sydney likes to be more black and white, pale colour. Yeah.
I actually just came back from Sydney and I love Sydney. I have a lot of people that listen in Sydney. I have a lot of clients who are from Sydney. And I was just in Sydney literally the other day. I go there probably 4 times a year. And I was like, man, people in Sydney, they just dress so nicely. I felt like I was in my Birkenstocks, which I just never take off. And I was like, oh, everyone's a bit fancy here. Even at the airport, I actually thought, is there a fashion trade show or something? Oh, no, there was like a homewares one. But I was like, man, people are like fancy. And yeah, so I get what you're saying about that. Is there anything where you would recommend with like the actual stall setup, like stuff that you've learned where you're like, oh, you should definitely have a newsletter, capture, sign up page, or a competition or some lollies or something to guide people to the shop or to the stall? Is there anything like that you would recommend?
I'll recommend always have your price signage really clear, because there are half of the people don't want to talk to you. So you just need to have everything very clear so they can read it. Just prepare that people will ask you all sort of questions. Yeah, the newsletter, we do have signage for newsletter. It's just your mostly QR code, because after COVID, no one wants to write down anything. Yes, but that's the main thing. You got to change and learn every market. And I'm still learning every time I make some changes, and it can go really well or go really, really bad.
In that as well, like getting out there, meeting people, getting exposure through markets, that's huge. What other marketing has worked well for you over the years?
Interestingly, word of mouth works really well for me. It's an old-fashioned word of mouth. I think it's because we have the shop.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of people tell their friends to come in, to the points that we have customers will come in to the shop every year. They're from overseas. And they're like, oh, whenever we come to Melbourne, we have to come to your shop to have a look. It's just really rewarding. It feels like, yeah, we're doing the right thing. And the second thing is the customer service that we have in the shop is something that you cannot replace online. Yeah, I think there's something different, isn't it? Everyone's telling you, oh, we need to go on Instagram and do this and do that. But yeah, when you have a shop and do market or doing markets, and the connection with people is so important, and it's just worth every penny.
Yeah, and I would say that you're amazing at that, because you and I met at Finders Keepers
Business. Yeah.
And I talked to a lot of people that day, and you definitely stood out, and you were just like, you've got this beautiful big smile and chatty and colourful. And I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely, you know, like, and so I can imagine that if you're shopping around a big market where there's hundreds of stalls, and it can be really overwhelming. I've gone to a lot of markets, working at a lot of markets and trade shows, and it can feel like, wow, so much stimulus. And then you remember those little human connections that you have throughout the day with actual people.
Yes, that's something that I learned, like going back to that introvert questions. What I learned is that I don't need to talk a lot, but if the extra questions that I ask people, they usually remember you. Like they come into the shop, I'll ask them, who are you buying this for? And then they were starting to tell you their story, and it become a good, nice conversation when they leave the shop. And I think this is very important to make them have that good, positive impact in their mind when they leave. And that drives them to read all the newsletter and Facebook. And yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it's such an interesting, like that, just that very small twist between, you know, normally I would say 95% of the time, someone will say, what are you looking for today? And you might say, oh, I'm looking for a candle, or I'm looking for whatever, a baby outfit. Whereas you're saying, who is this going to, you know, tell me about the person, which is such a beautiful way of crafting it, but it's such a tiny tweak that I would imagine makes a huge difference.
It does. Yes. Because some people, they just don't want to talk. But if you're talking about their friends, they're happy to talk about their friends.
Yeah. Oh, my God, this child has been so wanted for so many years, and then they finally got pregnant, and now I want to buy them something beautiful.
Yes.
Much more beautiful human story than I'm looking for a onesie in this size.
Yes, exactly.
I love it. So with your products, you encompass a diverse range of creations, from these beautiful aprons and wall prints and ceramics. How do you manage the creative process when you have so many different mediums? Like, it's not all just clothing, it's not all ceramics, it's
yes, that's a huge mistake, but as a creative you can't help yourself. But in the old days when I first start, because I'm self-taught and I don't know how to do like a product or collection wise to design a product, to design a collection, I just draw something and think, oh, does it look good on the cushion? Does it look good on the cup? If they do, I put the picture on. If they don't, I just leave it. But these days, it's half and half. Some days I do need to design tea towels just for the Christmas season. Then I think, oh, okay, what look good on the tea towels? And I draw that purposely. But it's always watercolor, color pencils, iPad, Photoshop. It's a mixture of different things. Yeah, wish myself good luck.
And so if someone's listening in and they are an aspiring creative and they're thinking, I want to go on this similar journey to you, what are the kind of things that you would tell them to avoid? Or flip side, what things would you have done more of? You know, like I often think I could have got into social media earlier or podcasting. Oh my God, I waited 3 years to do this podcast because I thought my voice sounded very nasally because I've had three operations on my nose. I've got lots of sinus problems. And I was just convinced that people would be like, oh my God, her voice is so nasally. And no one has ever said that, ever. So I would definitely go back and do that. But like for you, what would you do more of, or what would you suggest people don't do that you did?
Don't do anything that I'm doing. No, I think I have a huge collection that I don't think is necessary to start to become that crazy when you first start. So yeah, keep everything small, but always evolve with the business. So when I first start, I only want a homeware store. I never want a baby staff and everything else. But when people come in, they buy the products, the cushions is for their kids or the cups is for grandchildren. Then I realized, okay, this is actually what people want. So you change the direction to more kids focused products. And now we have people buying prints, a lot of prints. And so, okay, well, we focus more on the prints. So we're always changing, depends on what people want. So never just fix yourself to one thing. I think that's why I choose the brand name as my name, because I will never be just one thing. I can be anything. But it's very tempting for creative. It's so easy to just do this and do that. And yeah, you'll end up having a lot of products at home that you don't know what to do. Because as a shop, we know if you only have two or three products, it will never sell. You need to have a collection. So you're better off just choose one or two things that you think or you really, really love making, doing, then focus on them and have a few variety for people to choose. And that, I think that's just the psychological side of the business. But yeah, just be more focused. Yes. It's so easy. Creative. We love everything.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So much. And I was going to say, and I'm putting you on the spot again, but on the topic of, you said you've hired some people that work in the South Melbourne market store, like where were you at when you decided I actually need to hire other people to come into this?
When things are out of control. You just really need a second person. I have been hiring for the shop for a long time. I just cannot be at the shop and doing all the drawings and all the business stuff at the same time. But that person is only for the shop. It's never do marketing or newsletter, that kind of thing. It's never a real assistant. It's only recently I just let go. I just say, oh, can you do this for me, please? I can't handle this, just too much, which is really, really good. And I think having someone actually helps me to understand what I'm good at, what I can let go, what people can do it with me. It's a learning process about myself as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, business is such a learning process. I always think it's like you're the psychologist and you're the person getting psychology. But then I put that on TikTok recently and the lovely Marion Piper replied saying, you're actually also the trauma. You're the trauma and you're the psychologist and you're the person getting And so on that note, outside of helping yourself by hiring people and learning to let go, have you had any business mentors or sources of inspiration that helped you along this journey? Like, have you read any books or films that you're like, this has really helped? And likewise, any like tech tools or apps that you're like, could not run the business without this?
So you are my best inspiration. I read your book and I listen to your podcast every week and it's just so, so good. I especially like the short training. Those are really, really handy because sometimes I just need to drive to the post office and that's the time that I have to listen to something useful. And yeah, it's really, really good. I constantly reading books online, everything, but I'm kind of wiring down a little bit so I don't get too overwhelmed and confused. My husband, he's always my person. Anything that uses logic is going to him.
Is it his own thing and then just supporting like on the side, or is he part of your business?
he has his own things. Yeah, he's doing his, but to me, he's always in. he can't get away with it. Yes. He's just constantly listening, even just listening. He just need to listen to me whinging all the time. Yeah.
I love that. And sorry, I interrupted you. Anyone else or any other books or anything you'd recommend or apps?
No, it's the people. It's the people around you. Yeah, I think that's more important than anything. Yeah.
I completely agree. And so what are you most proud of from your journey in business so far?
There are so many proud moments, like my artwork goes to License to Spotlight or opening the shop. But the proudest time is actually when people come to me and say how my products become their journey, become their story. It's not very often, but every now and then people come in and say to me, oh, I'll just give you an example, because all my drawings has a story behind. There's always inspiration behind. And when I first start the shop, a customer comes in, she grab a cushion, has Love You More written on the cushions and the teddy bear drawings. She got it and I said to her, oh, I draw this because my husband say it to me all the time. And she said, oh, yeah, I'm getting it for my daughter because my husband used to say to her all the time and my husband passed away.
Oh my God, I'm about to cry.
And moment like this, knowing my work is someone else's life, become their story, it's just, yeah, it happens every now and then when people tell me story like this, just makes me feel, oh, I'm here for a reason.
Yeah. Oh, that is so beautiful. That is so beautiful. Oh, gosh. Gosh, yeah. You just never know what is going to happen. Like, I use your cup, one of your reusable cups. We have two in the house and there's a blue, bluish one. And I'll say to my son, no, get the blue one out. And I was thinking about this before I hit record because I use it so often. He knows it, everything else. And last year I went to visit my mum's sister in Ireland and my mum has passed away. And she had these little cups on her, like to have cups of tea. And I was like, oh my God, you have the same cups that mum had. And she, I hadn't seen them since like probably the 1980s or 1990s. And so for the rest of that trip, when I went to Spain and London, I was like desperate to find a cup, like yep. bring home to be like, oh, that's my bit of my mum. So yeah. I always think these things, like, people might come into your store and never tell you what they're buying it for, but then that becomes like exactly what you said, part of their story and part of their memories of childhood or other things in their life.
Yes. Yeah. There are people coming to buy the prints that they're living in Melbourne, but they grow up, they were born in Adelaide so that they have the Adelaide Hill print on their wall just to remind them where they're from. It's just really story like this. Yeah. It doesn't need to be big, huge event of, yeah.
Beautiful. And so if people have not seen your beautiful products or they're listening and they want to connect with you or they want to come and see your store, if they're maybe coming to Australia or Melbourne from anywhere in the world, where can they connect with you and what is next for you?
They can always find me at South Melbourne Market. I have the shop. I work there on Wednesday and Sunday, but find me on Instagram, then you can find out what's happening with my life. So Suki, spell it S-U-K-I. McMaster is M-C-M-A-S-T-E-R. What's next? Something exciting, but I can't really tell you yet. But I will be in Big Design Market in May.
That's so exciting. Well, I will make sure that we link to everything. And your website?
Yes, it's just my name. Yes.
Oh, and we were talking before we hit record. It really is your name, McMaster. It's a cool name. And so I'll link to all of that and then also your socials so that people can go and follow and find out what this big, exciting thing
is. Yes. Yes, please. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing and just providing so many insights and tips.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Bye.
See you later.
Oh, how delightful is Suki? Such a beautiful, kind and curious creative person. And her illustrations are just so gorgeous. I have multiple Suki McMaster products. And if you haven't checked them out, you definitely need to. You can find all of that at Suki McMaster, SukiMcMaster.com. You can also go on over to Instagram and see everything they're doing there at Suki McMaster. Again, one word, SukiMcMaster. And we'll link to those in the show notes. And for this episode, you'll be able to find the show notes at mydailybusiness.com/podcast/394. So I just took away so many things from that, and I know you will too. I am going to highlight two of these, as always. The first is when, and I think this is something that gets missed a lot. Not even I think, I know, because I talk to people and they haven't thought of these things. And I love that Suki brought it up. So if you are going to do any kind of trade show, market, etc., make sure you think about your objective. Like, what is it that you're trying to get outside of necessarily, you know, meeting stockers and getting sales? It's like, what else are you trying to get? Are you trying to make connections? Are you trying to build up your email list? Are you trying to get feedback on a new collection or a new product line? Really utilizing that time, especially those face-to-face conversations, especially if you're like a wholesaler or you don't have a physical shop like Suki does. And a lot of people that do markets are not at that stage yet of having a physical shop. And so this is some of the only time that they can get that direct feedback from people as they're looking at products, as they're observing and asking questions and asking different things that even, you know, where is it made? How is it made? How long does it take you to make it? How do you come up with your illustrations? Sort of using these questions then as content for your marketing, because that's what lots of people are thinking if that's what they're saying to you at a market. So I love that she brought up, you know, if you're going to put this time and energy and effort, and my God, she put effort in with flying to Melbourne to do markets, then make sure you're getting something out of it and that you're really clear on why you're doing it and what you want from it. So I love that she brought that up. The second thing that really spoke to me was when Suki talked about figuring out a way to do business that aligns with who you are. Now, Suki talked about being an introvert and, you know, when people come in the shop, she was kind of jokingly being like, don't talk to me. But then when they do, she was like, I've figured out a way to have like these beautiful, real conversations with people, and that it doesn't have to be, you know, how she talked about in social media, like jumping around and everyone's like hyped up, and that's not her. So she was like, try and figure out a way to do it the way that feels aligned with you. And, you know, once you get Suki talking, as you can hear, she's just so bubbly and positive and interesting and curious and, you know, so heartfelt as well. And you can just imagine that in a beautiful conversation within a store or, you know, in a market as well. And I think she's figured out a way to do it that is in complete alignment with who she is. And I think a lot of the time, especially when you're starting out in business or you're doing a new, you know, you're bringing in a new production of something or a new service offering, you sometimes look around at what other people are doing in the market and you're like, oh, that's how it's supposed to be done, even if that feels a bit ick for you. I remember years ago, I did a Instagram story for this sort of partnership I was doing. And I just remember I did it and it was just not me. And this is at least, God, 6 years ago. And I remember my husband saw it and he said, who is that? Because that is not you. And I was like, I know. And it felt weird. It felt icky. I felt like I was trying to show up as somebody else. And I deleted it because I just felt like, you know what? I'm going to figure out a way to do this partnership content that isn't like all the other people they've worked with. And I ended up just doing it in my way and it worked. They were happy. But when I first did it, I was like, oh, well, these are the last five other people they've worked with and this is how they did it. So, you know, they kind of all did it similarly. So I should just do it like that. And it just felt wrong. I felt wrong when I was filming it. It just did not sound like me. And yeah, I was just like, okay, just what can I do in a way that's going to feel good for me? Because if you put out that energy and people can tell it's not you, you feel a bit fake, it's not going to come across well and it's not going to do well. So I love that she has figured out a way to align who she is with how she presents the business online as well as in store. So much to take away. I'd love to know what you thought of that. So please, you can always message us at mydailybusiness_ on Instagram or just at mydailybusiness on TikTok, or you can send us an email, hello@mydailybusiness.com. If you wanted to get in touch with Suki, as I said before, the Instagram is Suki McMaster, one word, and the website is sukimcmaster.com. And we'll link to all of that in the show notes, along with everything else that we've talked about today. Thank you so much, Suki, for coming on, and thank you for listening. And if you found this useful, I would love it so, so much if you could leave a review or hit the stars on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast. Thanks for listening. Bye. Thanks for listening to the My Daily Business podcast. For a range of tools to help you grow and start your business, including coaching programs, courses, and templates, check out our shop at mydailybusiness.com/shop. And if you want to get in touch, you can do that via email, hello@mydailybusiness.com, or you can hit us up on Instagram @mydailybusiness_. You can find us on TikTok @mydailybusiness, or find me, Fiona Clarkey, on LinkedIn. I look forward to connecting.